For Oasis Audio, I'm Wayne Shepherd. My guest is the author and narrator of her own book, I might add, Jennifer Grant. Jennifer is the author of Momumental, in print from Worthy Publishing, and of course now as an audiobook from Oasis Audio, so that we can actually hear the tone of voice that Jennifer uses. And with a book like this one, that adds so much to experiencing this book. Jennifer, do you agree? You've been through the experience of reading your own book now. How'd it go?
It was fun. I wish I had practiced this ahead of time, but I actually even sang a little bit in the book. Yeah, just little snippets of choruses. And when I sang them, I asked the engineer whether he wanted me to do that, and he said, sure, go for it, you know. But I hadn't planned that ahead of time, so I can't promise that the singing is very beautiful, but it's authentic.
It's authentic. That's the best kind of word, right? And for those who haven't hit the play button yet on the audio edition, you're in for that treat to get to hear Jennifer sing. Well, you're a very experienced author and journalist, Jennifer, but in this book, you're somewhere between Irma Bombeck and a classical theologian philosopher. I can't quite name the name, but it sort of all comes together in Momumental, doesn't it?
I guess so. You know, I did reflect a lot on faith. And Irma Bombeck, certainly, I love her books about parenting, and I find her so refreshing and funny. Even, you know, I always think maybe her work will seem dated, but when I return to it, I always get a laugh from it.
And as I looked at your book, too, when I picked it up, I thought, okay, this is a book for moms and how to, you know, the daily grind of life as a mother.
Mm-hmm.
This is a book for everybody. This is a book for men, too. I just got to say that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I've heard actually from a few men who've read it that it meant a lot to them as parents. And I did try to sort of include dads in there, too. You know, when I write about my own husband's experience as a father or times that we've had either clashes or times when we've come together about the way we're raising our kids, I think dads will kind of connect with that
mm-hmm.
as well.
Well, where are you and your husband right now in raising kids? At what age levels are they at this moment?
Well, we have two tweens and two teens. And so our boys are almost 14 and almost 16. So my son is a few weeks away from getting his driver's license, my oldest. And then our girls are 10 and 12. So it's, you know, it's a whole new world of middle school and high school for us now.
Yeah, I think we should bow and pray, actually. What do you think?
I'd be happy to.
I'm sure your husband do a lot, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're in, it's an exciting time in many ways. You know, at this age, I'm starting to see things bloom in them that I saw in them as little kids, you know, interests that they had, gifts they have, personalities that they exhibited early on in their lives. Now I'm seeing sort of where that's guiding them in their lives. So it's actually a pretty interesting time.
Well, I mentioned Irma Bombeck's name because she had such a great sense of humor, and you do too. This book was very entertaining to read, but it gave you a lot to think about. But where does that humor come from?
I don't know. I mean, I love to laugh. I love to see what's funny in a situation. I've been reflecting actually recently on how sort of poking fun at yourself and naming the things that our faults or failures actually sort of frees you, you know, frees me anyway, and I think it frees others from feeling bound to those things. So when we name, like in the book, there's so many places where I talk about my own failures or mistakes I made or times when I feel vulnerable or second-guess myself as a mom. And I think by actually saying that out loud and acknowledging it, I don't feel so much pressure to be perfect or to do it all right. And, you know, I think other people connect with that, and they say, oh, phew, I'm not the only one who feels this way.
Yeah, and your experience growing up in a home that was broken is very critical to this book as well, because you started out thinking life would be very different as a parent for you, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always felt like because I'd grown up with my mom, who was a single mother, I wanted to have this sort of perfect, you know, almost leave it to beaver like family once I was married. I hoped that somehow I'd be able to achieve that. At the same time, I feared that I wouldn't be able to do that, that, you know, I didn't have enough examples in front of me of how healthy marriages worked and so on. And so I felt kind of this pressure and kind of, I put a lot of pressure on myself. And so this book really talks about the journey of going from, you know, fearing that I wouldn't be able to have a functional family to discovering what it really looks like to make that in a real way, in an authentic way, not in sort of a glossed over everything is perfect way, but just in the realities of what it takes to make a marriage and to raise children. It isn't perfect. It isn't Leave It to Beaver. You know, it is what it is. And I think, you know, each family approaches the conflicts we have and the convictions that we hold in different ways. And so this story is just the way I've sort of negotiated those things.
Yeah, you mentioned the wisdom of choosing your battles wisely and how you came to that conclusion that you can't do everything. You've got to choose what to focus on. But what are some of the non-negotiables that you've concluded are most important for families?
Mm-hmm. Well, in my family, I talk to the kids a lot about respecting each other and respecting other people. We just had actually a big conversation over dinner last night with one of our sons who was talking about a new kid at school and how some of the other kids in the eighth grade were teasing this kid or sort of judging him. And we, you know, I pulled out, you know, Matthew 25, and as I have many times in my parenting, and said, you know, you have the job right now of welcoming him. He's a stranger. You need to welcome him with respect. So respecting each other in the family and also respecting the people we come into contact with is a non-negotiable. We also try to have dinner together. I have a chapter in the book.
Yeah, good chapter.
About that. Yeah, and just that, what that affords is our family gets the time to actually settle down and sit together and hear each other and hear what our lives are really like in the day-to-day. So eating together is another one. Another non-negotiable, although all these things, of course, there are times when we can't do them, but I like for all of us to go to church together and actually sit together and worship together. I think that experience is another one that kind of connects us on a spiritual level with each other.
Mm, very helpful. Now, I mentioned your career as a writer, Jennifer. Tell me about the things that you've been involved with. I know you have a previous book that you've written, but as a journalist, you have quite a resume as well.
Yeah, my biggest interest has been for the last, you know, since I became a mother, in writing about parenting and also writing about children globally. So I look at it both, you know, in terms of you know, how children are raised within individual homes, but I also like to think about and do research about how kids are faring, you know, globally. So I've written about issues around HIV and kids who are orphaned by AIDS, both college students in, you know, I've written about college students in Namibia who are given scholarships after kind of growing up on the streets to attend university. And those kind of stories always are compelling to me, of how kids are able to survive around the world. You know, I write about funny suburban things in that Irma Bombeck, you know, vein. But then I also like to write about global poverty issues and ways that people are reaching out to children and vulnerable people around the world. So family is sort of the general topic, but then I look at it from different aspects.
Can I ask, how do you communicate your values about the things that you believe in, those areas of social concern? How do you pass those on to your children without saying, you must think the way I do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the most important thing is not so much to talk about it, but to have them, you know, meet my friends who are working in other places. I have a friend who is the founder of a wonderful organization in Zambia called Chikumbuso, and it serves people who are widows and orphans affected by HIV and AIDS. And she's come to our home a number of times and talked about her work and had sales of some of the products that are made at Chikumbuso in our home and at our church. And so I like to have them see really vital, connected people who are doing important work, and just let them overhear our conversations and sort of see what other people are doing and be able to kind of touch the products that people are making. And, you know, so I do less sort of lecturing about that and more kind of exposing them to people who inspire me.
I knew you when you were a young teenager, and I kind of think that's the experience you had, didn't you?
I did, exactly. That's right. My mom was a person who, you know, and she still travels, but she traveled a lot when I was growing up, and I was often along for the ride. And so I had the privilege of meeting really interesting people all over the world who were passionate about their work, whatever it was. And yeah, that I was kind of an observer. That's very insightful. Yeah, I was always sort of sitting in the back of the room listening and observing her relationships and learning about, you know, different people's lives and how they were connecting to the world.
I've seen that in my own children, and I think we overemphasize, you know, making all the points that we need to make as parents and underemphasize the power of just being together and modeling and learning and as you say, you know, the back of the room just kind of eavesdropping on what's going on.
I think that is more, I mean, because kids, when they feel a lecture coming on, I think their internal, you know, earbuds put on their music or their, some other kind of background noise. But when they're able to, and when they were able to see people, you know, the people that I was exposed to by my mom when I was growing up and the people I hope that my kids get to meet through me and my husband, I think that they're all vital people, you know, people who are happy, who delight in their lives, people who have really found a purpose and joy. And so that too will catch kids' attention.
Yeah, and a variety of people too, and cultures, and it really is fun. I've enjoyed that very much too. I know another issue for you that is a vital concern to your family is adoption.
Well, of my four kids, my youngest was adopted when she was a toddler, and she was born in Guatemala. We, my husband and I, traveled down to Guatemala a couple of times during that process. We have not returned yet as a family, although that's definitely a plan that we have when she's a little bit older and can take it in a different way. I support an organization called Both Ends Burning, and it's a wonderful organization that works for ethical adoption and adoption reform. And the concerns of that organization are that there are so many orphans around the world, and the process is so long and so expensive and has in many places been very tangled ethically. And so this organization is sort of, I would say, on the forefront of trying to cut through red tape for families, but also to ensure that each adoption is ethical, that there are no sort of hints or any kind of trafficking or anything like that. And so organizations like that really inspire me. I encourage anyone who's interested in adoption to look them up, Both Ends Burning. .org, I believe, is their URL.
I'm glad to know that. And tell me about the Redbud Writers Guild. This is something else you're very much involved in and sounds pretty exciting.
It is. Redbud is my writers group, which became, well, it's become a much larger group than it was a few years ago. It was a very informal gathering of writers who live in the Chicago area, women, who, and we came together and we still come together monthly to look at each other's work, to critique it, to support each other. We are friends to each other. We have really, really been vulnerable with each other in terms of bringing work that is very fresh, very new, very much first draft kind of work, and then sort of guiding each other through the process of writing a proposal. We connect each other with agents and other professionals in the publishing industry. And recently, we've started to invite other people to become members, not of our own little working group, which meets, you know, monthly, but of the organization at large. And so all over the country, actually, and I think even a few in Canada, we have Redbud writers who gather together in small groups and provide that sort of friendship and support to each other. And we have a presence on Facebook, and we talk, you know, all the members talk on Facebook. And it's I think it's very exciting. We like to, you know, every month or so, someone will say, oh, I have a new, you know, I have a new proposal. Let's look at it together. And then inevitably, a few months later, that person will say, hey, I'm trying to decide between this publisher and that one. What should I do? And, you know, it's not, I don't mean to imply that it's sort of a magic trick that anybody who's in Redbud gets published. The people who are publishing books are people who have been writing for decades and who have really been crafting wonderful work for years and years. And so basically this group is sort of, you know, it's an incentive to do our work because we show up with each other every month, and we're able to kind of, guide people toward professionals that can be helpful to them.
Boy, that sounds fascinating. It really does. And so helpful to both the experienced writer as well as the novice, the beginner who wants to understand what this is all about and look to someone for some wisdom.
Yeah. Well, and we're even having our first retreat this year. And, you know, one of the things that we're planning to talk, you know, those of us who are the founders are going to talk about the fact that it is such a craft. It, you know, writing is about doing it every day and about really learning how to, you know, take command of our voices and to learn how to be clear and to be engaging and to be funny, if that's what the work calls for. And so we're really going to talk about the practice of putting in your 10,000 hours, to quote Malcolm Gladwell there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
A lot of work.
Right.
And there is a website for Redbud.
That's right. It's redbudwritersguild.com.
And speaking of websites, you are on the web with your own website, and mm-hmm. we can find you at jennifergrant.com?
That's right.
All right, that easily, and also on Facebook, and I'm sure you're on Twitter as well.
That's right.
The world is on Twitter these days.
That's right.
Well, glad for it. All right, now, before I let you go, I got to ask you, what is a big fledgy yes? What is a big fledgy yes?
Well, I know you're referring to the dedication in the book. Chapter one in Monumental is called Fledge Words and Fairy Dust. And Fledge Words refers to a term that my college professor, Dr. Joseph McClatchy, you might have run into him at Wheaton College. I don't know if you ever took classes from him.
I've certainly heard the name, but I've not met him.
Yeah, he's now passed away, but he was this wonderful, inspiring, funny, quirky, just beautiful person who was also an Episcopal priest. And he used that term fledge words and fledge letters to talk about words and letters of the alphabet that he felt really made our souls reach toward God. And so he would say things like, he would stand in front of the class and put his arms up and make a capital Y, you know, stretching his arms toward the ceiling. And so he would say, when you say the word yes, it's a fledge word. It's a Y is a fledge letter. And he'd reach his arms up, and he talked about how certain words and certain letters drew us toward God and sort of made us fly to heaven. And so the dedication with big fledgy yeses is to my kids and to my husband, because I feel that way when I think about them. I feel sort of, you know, this joy that makes me want to rejoice and reach toward heaven.
That's very sweet. It is. Well, I just had to ask that. I did see that in the dedication, and it sure caught my attention. So, and it kind of is a little indication of your personality, too, I think. So, well, Jennifer, this book is so fun and so meaningful, Monumental, Adventures in the Messy Art of Raising a Family. Sure glad for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
And thanks for reading this book for us in this audio edition.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And I'm sorry about the singing if I'm off key. It's only a little bit of singing, so do not fear.
Makes it charming. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you.
Jennifer Grant, the author of Monumental. And for Oasis Audio, I'm Wayne Shepherd.